It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in just a bit, we'll talk to a guest who says despite a lot of criticism, a liberal education is still essential to the country's success.
First, we're talking to a political science and courts expert about the potential future of the John Doe investigation in Wisconsin. Some pundits say the federal court decision halting the investigation could make its way to the United States Supreme Court.
Last week, U.S. District Judge Rudolph Ronda ruled that the type of advocacy done by conservative groups like the Wisconsin Club for Growth is not subject to government control, even if it's done in coordination with an active campaign. Legal experts say the ruling conflicts with some recent Supreme Court decisions.
Jolly Emery is with us. She's Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. Jolly, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
I want to start with a brief recap. Last week was a busy one when it came to John Doe. What happened last week in the courts?
Well, what happened is that we first got a ruling from Judge Ronda it's an interesting ruling. First, he ruled that there needed to be an injunction. It's a preliminary injunction which halted the John Doe investigation. And then he went further than that, though. He didn't just say that this is going to be a preliminary injunction before I look at all the merits legal questions in this case. He went on to say that he believed that the First Amendment rights of Wisconsin Club for Growth had been violated by the prosecutors and the John Doe investigation, and he went on to even further to say that the First Amendment protected the type of coordination that they had been engaging in because it was issue advocacy and not what's considered to be express advocacy. Now, from there, there was, of course, a quick appeal, and within 24 hours, his injunction was reviewed by the Seventh Circuit in Chicago, and a three-judge panel ruled that he could not issue the injunction as he had, and that part of his injunction had required that the federal part of Ronda's injunction had required that the prosecutors return documents to Wisconsin Club for Growth and other documents they had gathered during their investigation, and that they were to destroy all their copies. And the three-judge panel of the U.S. Courts of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit said that he could not require that the prosecutors destroy their copies and that they were not required to return those documents. They also said that with respect to the injunction that Ronda could only issue that injunction if he had considered the prosecutor's claim that this couldn't be a federal case because it's a state proceeding and that they're immune to lawsuit was frivolous. And Ronda had not said that in his original ruling, but then came out, you know, within a day and said, well, yes, I do consider this frivolous. However, even though the injunction has been reinstated, the lawsuit continues, and the Seventh Circuit will be looking at a variety of issues, including whether or not this is a case that should be dismissed as a prosecutor's working with the John Doe investigation originally argued.
Well, so some legal scholars are saying that the ruling or the issue that's being raised by all of this back and forth, it's pretty provocative, and it gets into sort of a no man's land of campaign coordination law. How do you see it?
Well, I think that that's right. I think that coordination at the federal level, the idea that FEC regulates campaign coordination and basically argues that states that any time that a campaign coordinates with an outside group, that this is something that is to be reported and regulated by the FEC. And obviously the FEC applies to federal campaigning. The state of Wisconsin goes even farther and considers that any type of coordination that goes on between groups must be reported to the Government Accountability Board. So in this instance, what Ronda has done is he's redefined campaign coordination, and he's basically said that as long as it's issue advocacy, it's protected by the First Amendment, which goes against the FEC's rulings on this issue and definition of coordination, and also flies in the face of the most recent ruling and by the Supreme Court in McCutcheon, which still considered to be coordination something that should be regulated or what's considered in-kind contributions, just like individual contributions.
Well, one important piece of this seems to be that the Supreme Court has thus far viewed this kind of coordination as being similar or analogous to campaign contributions, to money. How does that shake down when you look at this ruling?
Well, I think that there is, with respect to what has transpired here in Wisconsin and the relationship between the Walker campaign and Wisconsin Club for Growth and other groups, yeah, there was coordination going on. And Rhonda doesn't disagree with that. He says that there's coordination, but this was actually what he considers to be legal coordination coordination protected by the First Amendment, because the outside groups, which would include Wisconsin Club for Growth, are aligned ideologically or politically with Governor Walker's campaign. And there's no corruption taking place, he said, because they're not trying to, these groups aren't trying to influence Walker in any way, that they are on the same page. There's no corrupt influencing that could take place. And that basically it's just about educating and informing voters as you would with any other kind of issue advocacy ad. And issue advocacy ads are protected by the First Amendment, and the Citizens United decision did give a lot more First Amendment protection to issue advocacy than they had ever had in the past.
So there is speculation that this could be an area, again, it's sort of uncharted territory, that the Supreme Court could be interested in taking up. We've seen them venturing into this territory, obviously, in recent weeks with the aggregate campaign donations. What do you think about the prospects of it going to the Supreme Court and having this being a new sort of battleground?
You know, anything's possible. And I think that it does seem to fall within an issue area that the court has been very interested in lately. So the court might be, when I say the court, I'm talking about the United States Supreme Court. They might be willing to what's called grant cert or agree to take this case because they want to expand or allow for coordination under certain instances, which would be for issue advocacy as opposed to express advocacy. And express advocacy is where you basically tell people not to vote for a specific candidate, or you say you identify candidates clearly in an ad.
And if this would go to the Supreme Court, say, and the Supreme Court should decide that Judge Rhonda decided correctly in their view that this is relating to the First Amendment and should be protected, how would that change current campaign finance rules?
Well, it would change rules with respect to the definition of coordination. So coordination, if it's issue advocacy, would then be permissible and would not require reporting as it now stands. It requires that it be reporting like any other in-kind contribution. It would probably ratchet up the spending. Some analysis of the recent McCutcheon ruling said that because the Supreme Court had not touched coordination or kept rules regarding coordination in place, that there is sort of this leveling effect, even though donors can, you know, basically give lots more money than they could before. Under coordination, they still cannot coordinate directly with agents of a political campaign. But, you know, this would allow for even more money to come in, or maybe not even more money, but relax the rules and less reporting. So we don't know who is giving the money, who has the influence.
How is the Supreme Court trending over the last couple of years when it comes to laws affecting campaign finance and coordination?
They're trending, well, some might say they're trending in the direction of greater or broader free speech rights, and others would say they're trending in the direction of more money and maybe affecting democracy.
And so as far as the appeals process goes, so what do we expect to see there?
Well, the first thing that the appeals court is going to have to consider is whether or not this case should be dismissed. The prosecutors, as I said before, had argued that Wisconsin Club for Growth did not have a case, that this is basically a state issue. It doesn't belong in federal courts, that the federal district court judge, Rhonda in this instance, should not have heard the case, and that the prosecutors themselves were supposed to be immune from any sort of liability or prosecution. And so we'll have to see how the court rules on that. If they rule on that way, then you can still obviously have an appeal on the part of Wisconsin Club for Growth. But we also have other cases that are along these same lines involving the same issues percolating up through the state courts right now.
All right. So this one is with the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. Mm-hmm. Is there a timeline that you're expecting here?
I'm not exactly sure. They have the Circuit Court of Appeals has given the parties, I think, until July to file their briefs. So we won't really see any action until after July, after the briefs have been submitted and they have the opportunity to go over those arguments, but these things have been moving so quickly. I mean, the speed with which this has been, as far as the legal side, not necessarily the John Doe investigation, but as far as the court side is concerned, has been moving at such a quick pace that I would expect that a ruling would come out fairly quickly, maybe August.
All right. Well, we'll be watching it, and I'm sure you will too. Jolly, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That was Jolly Emery, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater.